to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. So we're going to start with a presentation from Mr. Soto on the Smart Schools Improvement Plan.
And his team, right, Mr. Soto?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, not just me tonight.
I do. You guys can come on up. All right. So I just have to set this up.
Okay, we stay here, Ricardo?
You're going to have the presentation in front of you, so it's entirely up to you.
See, it's awesome.
I can see everything.
The shining light. Yeah. It's not good.
Thank you. I'm saying this is what's going to be on the board, right?
Yes, exactly.
I have one really in the books in my office. Yeah, Rainer and I have seen quite a time.
She wants to see it for a second.
Do you?
Yeah.
All right, good evening, everyone. Thank you all for coming. I want to begin by thanking the board and the community for allowing the Technology Committee to present this Smart Schools Improvement Plan for your perusal and hopefully for your approval. I'm joined with me this evening by my other Technology Committee members, Mr. Marcus Batian, Mr. William Nofi, Ms. Michelle Kennedy, and Ms. Dawn Napiri. Right? Okay, good. Your pronunciation. All right. Once again, like I said, we are here to present the Smart Schools Improvement Plan. Some of the things that we are going to discuss is some expenditure items that we are going to propose to the Board of Education. I just wanted the board to be aware that you have a folder in front of you that has four documents. One is the PowerPoint presentation. The second is the Smart Schools Improvement Bond, Smart Schools Bond Act guidance document that was submitted by New York State Department of Education for all districts in terms of providing us with insight as to what we need to do to prepare for the Smart Schools Improvement Plan. The third item is the Instructional Technology Plan that we submitted as a district about a month ago. I submitted it with the assistance of Mr. Nofi and Mr. Kingham, and John is here today, so good evening, John. And the last item is the vendor quotes that is the supporting documentation for every expenditure item that we have in the proposal. So let me walk through sort of the Smart Schools Bond Act. The Smart Schools Bond Act was approved by the voters on Tuesday, November 4th of 2014. It is sort of a technology initiative to school districts. The state actually allocated $2 billion to improve upon the technology infrastructure and what is offered to students across the state, which is an amazing amount. Center Rich's allocation is $1,034,558. Now, we have to look at that sort of as a reimbursement model. So the state allows us to spend up to that amount, but they will reimburse us within what the state has identified as 90 days, a 90-day turnaround. So some might think that that's kind of ambitious, but I have to actually give a lot of kudos to the state. Over the last few months, almost every document that we presented to the state has been approved in a very short order. I don't know how they're doing it, but almost everything that we presented has been approved in a very, very short order. So, I mean, hopefully they will stick to the 90-day turnaround that they have identified. Now, in terms of how you can utilize the Smart Schools Bond funding, you can utilize it for four projects. The first one is the installation of high-speed broadband or wireless internet connectivity. The recommendation is 100 megabits per second per 1,000 students that you have in a particular campus. We currently have 101 at the elementary and 101 at the secondary complex. So we are within that definition or within the guidelines that it is established, but we are we're hit it by just a small amount. We're literally, above it just by a small amount. The second item that you can actually present as a proposal for expenditure items is the construct or enhancement of modernized education facilities. Now, what that means is that if you have a pre-K program, or if you want to incorporate a pre-K program into your system, the state would allow you to use the funds towards that endeavor. Meaning if you want to build a wing for a pre-K program, the state would support that. The second item is actually what is called transportable classroom units. And those are those sort of separate classrooms, those portable classrooms that you see some districts are unfortunately forced to introduce to their system because of overcrowding. We don't necessarily have this, but the state frowns upon that. They want students obviously to be in the building. So if a school district has those portable classrooms, they will support you building upon your current facilities to get rid of those particular portable classrooms. The third thing is acquisition of learning technologies such as hardware, servers, laptops, desktops, and whiteboards. These are some of the things that we are going to propose to the Board of Education this evening for hopefully your consideration and hopefully your approval. The last item is the installation of high-tech security features in schools and campuses. I don't think anyone in the room would argue that over the last decade we've seen a lot of horrific things happen at schools. The state acknowledges that. The state wants to support the enhancement of security at all levels at every school. So those are the four items that we can present as proposals for the expenditures that we are considering for the Smart Schools Bond Act allocations. Now, the improvement plan that we present, that every school district presents, has to include these things. One, it has to include stakeholders. So obviously we have community members, we have teachers, we have administrators, we have individuals that represent different stakeholders within our community. It has to demonstrate a need. Meaning, one of the items that we're going to discuss momentarily is changing or including the system that we currently have into like a Wi-Fi system. We don't have that now, so that is a need that we are identifying as a need. It has to align with the district instruction technology plan. That's why I gave the Board of Education a copy of the instruction plan. I believe that it aligns perfectly with the plan that we presented to New York State Department of Education. It has to demonstrate a long-term plan for maintenance of the investments that we make with the equipment. I'm going to speak to that later, the last slide in the presentation. And it also has to include a professional development component, which makes a lot of sense if you think about it. If you are providing technology to teachers, to staff members, they have to know how to use it. They have to know when to use it, why to use it, how are students going to benefit from the technology that will be available to them. So you have to include a PD plan as part of the improvement plan that you're proposing to the Board of Education, ultimately to the community. And the last item is that it has to address the education needs of all students, students with disabilities, the general education population, as well as ELL students. So it has to be something that kind of can be differentiated for every student in the system. Now, what do we have to do to receive the funds? So we have the funds now that have been allocated to us. There's a process that we have to follow. The first step would be to do exactly what we're doing this evening, to present the preliminary plan to the Board of Education for consideration. The second thing is if the board approves it, we have to post the preliminary plan on our website for 30 days. We have to allow the community to be able to comment on that plan. So we have to include an address, a contact person, or someone that they can communicate with in terms of whatever comments they have regarding the expenditure items that we're proposing to the board and the community for consideration. Lastly, we have to, after the 30 days, the Board of Education has to have a hearing, at which time they invite the community back to that hearing to comment on any of the expenditure items or the proposal that was presented to the Board of Education for consideration. That hearing can be part of a normal board meeting. We just have to advertise it 2 weeks in advance prior to the board meeting. So we have to have something available on the website that, you know, in 2 weeks we're going to have the hearing for the Smart Schools Improvement Plan proposal. All interested parties, please come and, you know, express your concern or, you know, approval. We also have to now, once that 30 days have expired and we've had the hearing, the Board of Education hearing, we have to post the finalized plan on our website. Then we present the plan to the New York State Department of Education, what is something called the business portal. I would, you know, present it in any format. What's interesting is that the state is doing this year, especially with the Small Schools Bond Act, is that it's allowing for a lot of flexibility with the presentation of the format of the Small Schools Improvement Plan. I called them a couple months ago and I said, you know, is there like a template that I should be following? And their response to me was, no. Just any format that you like. It could be a PowerPoint presentation. So if the board approves this and the community gets behind this as well, we can actually present what we're presenting tonight to the New York State Department of Education for review and approval. After it is approved, you can change up to less than 25% of your proposal. Anything more than 25%, the superintendent will have to post the changes on our website for 2 weeks, allow for comments again, and then once again post the finalized plan to New York State Department of Education. Now, to walk us through the technology use in neighboring districts, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Nuffy.
Good evening, everyone. I took an informal poll of some of my colleagues at neighboring districts in the area, and just to find out what they're doing with technology, what they have in their districts, what kind of equipment they're using, and just kind of informally ask them to email me back and say, hey, you know, what do you have? So I asked them a few things. Obviously, what district they're in. Does their district have Wi-Fi? Are they lit up through their whole campus with Wi-Fi usage? What kind of devices do they have for their students? Are they using Windows? Are they using laptops? Are they using iPads? And so on. What platforms are they using? Again, Windows, Chrome, iOS, Mac OS. Do they have a tech or a STEM lab? Do they have like a dedicated lab, a dedicated space where a student can go and, you know, experiment or use computers, or use technology and engage that way? Are they a Google school? A Google school is, you may have heard of Google Apps for Education. It allows students and teachers and administrators to collaborate on the web. They use Google Apps like Google Docs and Google Sheets. There's Google Hangouts, Google Classrooms, and allows them to use all that stuff online and on the web on almost any device they have. They can get it at home or at school. So I asked if these districts are Google schools and if they're using that. And finally, roughly what their K-12 population is, you know, a nice estimate, and how many total devices they have. Again, an estimate. So going through each one, we'll see. All of our close neighboring districts all have Wi-Fi throughout their district. What kind of devices they have? Hampton Bays, they have Windows carts and Chromebook carts between the middle school and high school. Sag Harbor is using Chromebook carts, MacBook carts, and they have Chromebooks in the classrooms dedicated for just grades 2 to 5. William Floyd, they have some laptop carts, only the secondary, but they are working towards going to 1-to-1 and BYOD. West Hampton Beach, of course, they have 1-to-1. Every student gets either a MacBook Air or an iPad, depending on the grade level. And Eastport South Manor, they have a variety of different devices. They have iPads, they have some Dell laptops, and they have a couple of different things in there. They're also working towards BYOD, bring your own devices, so students can bring their own stuff into the classroom and into the school. Again, the platforms they have are, everyone has kind of like different, with the exception of West Hampton Beach, they're strictly Mac. Most of the schools have a combination of Chromebook and Windows or Chromebook and Mac. That's just the platform, the operating system that they're using. And do they have a tech STEM lab? The only one that does not, it seems, is William Floyd. Most of the districts have it, and that's something that we were looking at with regards to the school at this technology. Technology improvement plan is looking at creating a STEM kind of workspace for the students. Finally, all those districts are Google schools. They're all using Google Docs, using Google Sheets, using Google Classrooms with their students to engage and collaborate between the students and student to teacher. It's a great product. And finally, we have the population stuff and the devices, just kind of give you the ratio of how many students they have versus how many devices they have. Obviously, the one that stands out is West Hampton Beach. They actually have more devices than they have students in their district, so that's kind of amazing. We kind of fall in line somewhere right now, I'd say, with like William Floyd as far as the number of dogs per cap versus number of students. You know, we're not quite, what was it, what we had? We had about 20, 30%.
Yeah, about 20%
devices to students. But this is just something we're working on building towards. Just want to give an example of what other districts in the area are doing and see how we compare to them and what we can do to bolster our technology for our students. Just make sure we're not totally far off the map saying, you know, we're going, not that we're going towards some wild pie in the sky ideas, but we're just trying to stay on the level with other districts in our area. That being said, I want to turn over to Marcus. He's going to talk a little bit more about what we're actually going to be spending on.
Okay, thank you, Bill. So I think you got a pretty good idea here that Center for Riches is kind of bringing up the rear from a technology perspective. So before I go through how we propose to address this, let me say a little bit about how this is organized. So the yellow column here is the cost that we've determined for the items. The board has supporting documentation for all of that. Again, these are not costs that the district would be responsible for. So this will be fully reimbursed by the state as soon as we make the purchases. The second column in gray on the right side is the lifetime. So this is actually the warranty lifetime of the equipment in almost every case. So we could actually expect, in some cases, these items would last longer, but we're guaranteed at least that much of a lifetime for these items. The last column in green was our attempt to address the state requirement that there be a long-term maintenance plan for this equipment. So in some sense, it is really trying to compare apples and oranges because all of these things are very different from one another. So what we did was rather simple. We took the upfront cost of replacement, direct replacement for these items, and we just divided that by the lifetime, the warrantied lifetime. Okay, so that gives you some kind of annualized cost or cost of ownership or however you'd like to express that. And that's really meant to give the public and the board some kind of an idea going ahead in the future if the decision was made that this was beneficial to the program and was to be maintained, what would the rough cost be? Okay, so it, in no way is it meant to imply that this would be a line item in a future budget for that amount, because obviously there are very different ways of paying for this equipment. Computers can be done through a lease agreement, BOCES. You could set aside reserve funds. You could go out to a bond and say, in the future, we want to buy this. So there are a lot of different ways that the board could go about doing this, but it's just some attempt to give an idea of what the cost is so you can look at the value for what you're getting. Okay, so let me start to go through this. District-wide wireless, I think that's pretty clear. We do have wireless here at Center for Riches. We do not have full coverage. So that first item would basically blanket the entire campus. It would enable the students to use devices anywhere. It would allow guests to use, if appropriate, allow the guests to use the wireless. And most importantly, it would enable the second item, which is laptop cards for all grades.
Can I just ask a question?
Sure.
On the annualized cost of the wireless, so right now you said we have wireless, but it's not completely covering the district. On your annualized cost, does that include increased data usage as a result of kind of all these additional... have we looked at that? Do we know what that means?
That I would definitely have to turn over to either Bill or John.
I mean, I know it's not like a home
this
system.
This is actually the cost for the hardware and for maintaining it. Okay. If you're just using internal data, then there is no cost.
Sure.
If you're going outside, then there might be.
It's only for the cost of getting the wireless coverage in the district.
Right.
You know, connecting on internal stuff. If we see that currently, if once we start adding more devices and the internet, our internet connection, as we talked about, is that 101 is not sufficient to support all these devices.
So 101 is what comes in from Cablevision,
right,
or wherever we get it, Optimum Light Path or whatever. And then, so do you think as a result of all of this, we would have to increase that to bigger tunnels or tubes or whatever?
It depends on how many devices we get.
Right.
It depends on how much they're used and how often they're used. Mm-hmm. It's something really we have to kind of... unfortunately, have to wait and see.
Okay.
And see if the additional devices, if the use is there, if it warrants it, then we have to reevaluate that and see if we need to get more purchase additional internet bandwidth.
Okay,
so once you do the wireless, then that enables you to distribute laptops throughout the campus. And that's the second item. So this is basically providing laptops in carts, for one for each grade, So this is the cost of the carts, the laptops themselves, protective cases, and warranty, three-year warranty for and management costs for the devices. So that you can see that cost breakdown there. We decided to go actually with Chromebooks. So these are the costs for Chromebooks because it just seemed to be financially the best way to go. So I think there may be some questions about transitioning from Windows to Chrome OS, Google Docs, but we can answer those questions if people have those.
And does all the software that we have now run on that, or would we buy new software?
Not all the software we have now run on that. It would depend on what it would be, right. But there are some applications that would not run on Chrome OS, such as the Waterfront program and like Photoshop. We'd have to find alternative versions of software to use if we don't run Chrome OS.
I mean, I don't know what our Waterfront.
There's still desktops that we have to just still utilize.
Yeah, we're still going to have our current desktop system, and that's one of the items that you're going to look at, number 10. So we're not necessarily replacing the desktops with the Chromebooks. The Chromebooks is more for classroom one-to-one utilization by our students and by the teachers.
So if we were going to use it for those types of systems, we should at least be thinking. I don't know what our Waterfront licenses say if we have. I don't know if you know either, but if we have the ability to transfer them to different OS, but we should at least think, you know, look at that and think about that. Because
we can.
Yeah.
We can. But we do have a dedicated lab for Waterfront,
right.
So we do utilize that. So I don't see how, I mean, think of it, I don't see how that would interrupt sort of the utilization of Waterfront as a program for our primary students.
Not an issue. Okay.
I just picked Waterfront as the first. I was just working there today, that's why I thought Waterfront at the top of my head is one of the things. There are other programs such as like AutoCAD and like those labs we have. That the AutoCAD labs is the main.
I just want to make sure we're thinking of all of the things. I mean, obviously we're going to approve some plan and use every dollar of this. I just want to make sure that we don't have all this stuff and then at budget time have kind of a we have to go out and buy X, Y, and Z, and it costs us another $100,000 that we could maybe even roll into here in place of something else. I don't know.
Yeah, this once again, the technology that we're presenting now is not a replacement of what we currently have. It's an enhancement.
I got it.
So, I mean, if you look at even item number 3 in terms of the STEM lab equipment that we're looking at, that would be for the secondary complex lab that we're proposing as part of the capital improvement bond, and we're allocating literally 29 computers that will be state-of-the-art computers that will be able to run CAD, and we'll be able to run some of the softwares that are used in some of our elective programs, and more elective programs that we would introduce to the secondary complex.
Okay, so basically we think, we looked at getting even more devices, but we think this is pretty good coverage. And in order to fit it all into budget, we chose this number. Ricardo just mentioned the STEM elective equipment. So what we've got here is a pretty varied list of items that would allow the district to offer greater exposure to STEM in the district to the students. We've got different categories here, so I can go through a little bit. CNC machine, mini lathe, so this would be more from the mechanical and engineering side of things. Green screen, video equipment, 3D printer, graphics tablet, so this covers the graphic arts side of things. 3D printer, that's very popular nowadays for all kinds of things. Ricardo mentioned the high-capacity computers. There are some items in here for looking at wireless, so with the spread of cellular technology and Wi-Fi, this would be something that the students could get some feel for by using the spectrum analyzer and signal generator. We have some robotics in here, so Lego Story Starter, Dash and Dot robots, e-bots, things like this, all things that are very popular and common nowadays, and this would give us the opportunity to expose the students to these things. Next item, number 4, is document cameras. So we currently have a number of those. They do get quite extensive use, and that item would actually be to completely outfit the district so that every classroom would have one of those. Digital microscopes, also those are another very important thing for bringing science in the real world to the students. So it would allow the teacher to project whatever it is under the microscope onto the smart boards in the classrooms, and this would give us one of those in every science classroom. Teachers would have that available. Okay, number six, we touched upon a little bit, increased security measures. So this addresses the state's understanding of the importance of security in the schools. What that item covers is actually video cameras in both campuses, both the secondary and the Clayton Huey campuses. So approximately 32 cameras throughout the district on both campuses, as well as a video recorder for all those cameras. It would also cover access at the entry doors, so it would be magnetic card readers, card printer, and the setup computer system for that. So it would give us the ability to track entry and exit, set up who can come in, who can't, things like that. Number seven is replacement of the current wireless bridge. So we actually are approaching end of warranty on that particular item. What it does is it gives us connectivity between the Clayton Huey campus and the secondary campus. So it's high-speed internet between those two, and that's used, among other things, for backing up the systems between the two campuses. This particular wireless bridge is 6 gigabit option, so it's actually double the speed of what we have now, so it would be an improvement. We looked at fiber as well, and the fiber would be faster but significantly more expensive, so we felt that this was the better option for the district. Number eight, elementary intercom system. There have been problems throughout the years with that intercom system. This cost covers the complete replacement of that system with an IP-based phone system. So all of the hardware to put telephones in every classroom that can communicate both with the central office, the front office, and outside. Internal infrastructure, so we have a number of IT items that are also approaching end of life in June of 2016. There's a SAND drive, which is basically a disk network for storing all of our files in the district. Network switches that allow all the devices to communicate over the network throughout the district. And a remote access server that gives staff the ability to connect in from outside the campus and have a desktop in front of them, basically. Classroom desktop replacements, we also touched on already. This is keeping up the equipment that we already have. So there's end of life coming up on 300 computers that the district is already leasing. So this would augment that. It would be the purchase of 150 new desktops to make sure that we don't drop or lose anything when equipment breaks. So that would allow us to maintain the desktops that we have now. And that brings the total up to $1,034,558, which is using everything essentially. And then in the annualized cost column, it comes up to $269,000 and change. So again, that's just some rough guesstimate of, if you had to guess, what would be the expense in future years, maybe year four, maybe year six, maybe further out than that, what would have to be made up by some other funding source that the state is giving us now. So with that, if there are any questions on particular details, I can take those. If not, I'll pass the presentation on to Dawn and Michelle.
One quick question.
Yes.
The wireless infrastructure, is that being put together to support a one-for-one or bring your own device?
It would have the capacity to support that. Yes.
You know, at least at the LAN level.
Right.
Internally.
Right. Okay.
So does that mean, translate for me?
So in other words, we'd be able to have 1,600 devices wirelessly functioning on the network. Not necessarily.
So we're future-proofing.
Exactly. You know, can every student have something, even though right now, again, we're only going to have 480, you know, looking down the road, you're going to need 1,600 or 1,700.
Right.
Yeah, it's somewhere over 100 access points, so it's got good capacity.
Should someone talk to, I don't know, if it's Carol or Ricardo, but the annualized cost obligation for this, what does that really mean, budget-wise, going forward?
Sure. It means that year four, at the when we're approaching the end of life, meaning the end of warranty on some of the items, we would have to, as a technology committee, come back to the Board of Education and possibly present another proposal in terms of what we can support based on our expenditure items.
Is it a condition? I'm just trying to understand. Is it a condition?
It's not. It's not a condition as part of the Smart Schools Bond Act or the improvement plan that you present to New York State Department of Education as a district. We're not obligated to show that we're going to support it in 5 years. We're obligated to show that you're going to maintain it, that you're going to support it over the course of the life of these items. In 4 years, we would have to come back to the Board of Education and the community and assess how we are functioning with these particular items.
So your
we still support it.
Your estimate is that in year four, to properly support this would be a budget line item of about $270,000 a year.
Yes, it's to support every single item. But it's almost a full replacement cost. So that's something I really want to stress to everyone.
At that point,
yes.
But what about our lease now?
You wouldn't have the full $269,000 if you then take that cost.
But either way, we're not signing up today. Like sometimes when you go for a tax abatement, you sign up and say, I guarantee I'm going to keep this number of X here to get it.
That's not the case.
We're going to try.
We're going to try to upkeep this. But some of these items that we mentioned, we may not have to replace the full cost of it. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example, such as the Wi-Fi system. $250,000 is the cost of the 110 access points, all the wiring, all the labor that goes into installing that equipment. Mm-hmm. In 4 or 5 years, that system might be working perfectly fine. We may come back to the board and say, we're not recommending to replace that now. Maybe we're going to recommend a replacement of 15 access points because these access points have been pretty weak. Right. So, once again, the replacement cost is, it may not be the actual initial cost of the investment that we're making now.
Is there opportunities for more of the infrastructure stuff to buy longer-term warranty plans, hardware, and maintenance?
They do support beyond the 5 years. Some of the equipment you can, but with most computers you cannot. Right. You can only support them in terms of a warranty up to 5 years.
And we're talking, this contemplates us purchasing these computers, not leasing them.
Yes.
Is that a requirement of the act? Or is that a requirement of the bond?
The leasing, let me just kind of speak to that. The leasing, we took a major lease out as a district 5 years ago where we looked at the current technology infrastructure of our system and made a determination at the time that we needed to upgrade that system. So we took a lease agreement at that time for $500,000. We've been paying that off over the course of the last 5 years. So we can do the same thing in the future, and I would recommend that we do, because it does defray the cost over the course of a few years.
You
don't necessarily have to pay it.
BOCES aid on that as well?
Yes, and it's BOCES aidable. So that's another benefit as well. So that's what our recommendation would be, possibly moving forward. But once again, year four, we would have to look at these 10 items and say, okay, are we still utilizing them to the same capacity that we thought? Technology changes as well. Mm-hmm. So we don't know what Chromebooks will look like in 5 years, in 4 years. It might be a completely different system.
But under this allocation of funds, there's no opportunity to lease versus buy. So to your point, we buy these. We have a five-year-old Chromebook.
Yeah, we own them.
So my question is there an opportunity under this to lease twice as many or something like that for the 5 years? Or is it must purchase? Sometimes they'll say the funds have to be used for the purchase.
No, I understand. I have to get back to you on that. I'm not sure. We have not leased. I mean, when you use the terminology of leasing is just allocating the money over the course of time. So it's almost like taking a loan.
But it's still the aggregate dollar.
Exactly. It's still the money that you're still looking at. So they use the terminology lease, but it's actually like a loan. That's really what it is.
Okay.
I don't know why they use the terminology lease.
Yeah, actually, another thing that's relevant to looking at, a per year cost and taking that particular number, the Bond Act does allow 2 years, I believe, to spread these expenses over, and so there may be some risk. The state may find that they're in a budget deficit next year, but they do allow to stagger these over 2 years. So, for instance, you could try to spread out that obligation so that things don't start to come due until year four, and then five, and then six, and then seven. So you could use that, if you wanted to purchase some of these items, and then next year come back and buy more of them. up to the limit of $1 million. So that would be another technique to kind of smooth out any budget irregularities that you might be concerned about.
Thank you. So the 269 actually can be reduced to, let's say, 134.
Right.
But at two different time frames.
Okay.
Hi, everyone. I'm Michelle Kennedy. I joined the technology committee last year when I was finishing my educational technology master's. So I'm just one test away from being an educational technology specialist. So I'm just really passionate and interested in getting technology into the hands of our students.
Okay. And I'm Dawn Perry. I'm a community member and a parent with children in the district. And I came over to the technology committee originally from the curriculum committee, so I'm very passionate about the educational benefits that technology brings to our students. I chaired the STEM subcommittee last year, and it's something that I specialize in vocationally. So we're going to talk to you today about the educational benefits all the way from kindergarten through middle school, high school, and beyond, college and career and beyond. So I'm going to read a couple of these bullets, and we'll expand with a few of the details, which Michelle will provide and elaborate. So first we'll talk about the lesson construction and methodology. So this first bullet that you see here, technology gives us access to different types of media, both for the teacher and also for the student. It gives you presentation tools. We know that not, you know, there's more than just PowerPoint out there. We have Keynote, we have Prezi, and Michelle can elaborate on some others that she uses.
So more than just the teachers using this interactive whiteboard to use Smart Notebook to present information and have the students come up and participate, that's definitely one model that works. But there are programs where if you give laptops to an entire class, you can kind of facilitate and walk through a presentation as the students see the same thing on their screen, and they, you know, just for an example, there's a program called Nearpod that I love, and you can only do it if every student has a device. So you can go through a presentation, students can draw their answers, draw diagrams, you can do multiple choice questions. So there's so many different presentation tools that teachers can use, and also students to collaborate, whether they're sharing a device and collaborating as a group, or if they each have their own device, they can collaborate through wireless internet.
Yeah. Next, we have access to the world. So years ago, we think about how we access information. We went to the library, right? Or maybe if you were lucky enough to have a computer at home, you may have been able to research a little bit, depending on how old you are, I guess. our students, now, they have these devices in their hands. They can access information whenever they want.
Right. They have the information at their fingertips, and as a librarian, I know how important it is for students to learn how to do proper research and find credible sources. So by the students being more familiar with using these devices and being able to access online databases and find credible sources on the internet, you know, this will just, the more they have, the more experience they have, the better they will be exiting SEMrush's.
They'll learn research skills, which as we know is extremely important as they get into college. Next we have allows for digital learning opportunities. So now we all know we have budget constraints. I know for myself, I can think of a million places I want my children to go on field trips. In fact, I'm always hounding, you know, Mrs. Hardwick and various people, let's go here, let's do this, and I know that we don't have the funds for that. When we have technology in our hands, we can visit the world. We can visit these places. We can learn about them in virtual tours. So I think that is going to be extremely important for a district like ours.
And we talked a little bit more about increasing their global awareness. You know, a lot of times all they know is SEMrush. So increasing their global awareness by taking virtual field trips. There's so many cool programs out there that are free. So once we have these devices, we can take these virtual field trips. Or you can look at it in a different approach, and maybe students are researching a certain country, they can make their own digital field trip to share with their classmates. Programs such as ThingLink and Google Maps. There's so many great things for the students and the teachers to do in the classroom just to increase global awareness and have guest speakers come in through Adobe Connect or Skype.
So that would be a great way to pull. We used to do pen pals. Now we can use multimedia and reach out and connect to people in other parts of the world. So next, encourages differentiation of lessons. Okay, we all know that our classroom size is a little larger than we may like. We have a lot of students, and the student-to-teacher ratio is not the most ideal situation. Again, we're working with the budget. There's nothing we can really do about that at this time, except for this technology does solve that. We have all different kinds of learners, learners with various different learning abilities. It's becoming really hard for teachers to reach out to all those types of learners. This technology is going to help with that because some of these programs work in a way that they kind of create their own learning map based on their knowledge state, and then that knowledge state will improve in a kind of an individual way. And it allows teachers to sort of, access this information and tailor it.
There's so many, there's text-to-speech, speech-to-text, so many different visuals, audio, for those kinesthetic learners who kind of just can't sit still if they have something in front of them that they're working on, or even when you're looking at students in the classroom, they're not all on the same reading level. There are programs and databases out there where you can modify the Lexile level to kind of meet that student's needs. So rather than, having everybody reading this same exact article word for word, you can definitely differentiate by making some reading material changing.
Yeah, that's a great example. So another bullet here, we're talking about future vocational opportunities. I just wanted to make this clear. So even though I'm very much into STEM, if you say to yourself, you're sitting there, my child is probably not going to go into computer science. Not everybody's going to go into computer science. But this technology is going to do many different things. So it's also going to help spark creativity. So there's the digital storytelling methods out there. There's all different software, ways for them to express themselves creatively, music, art, creative writing. So it's not just computer science, but I do want to stress that in computer science, there's going to be a deficit of jobs in 2020. And so when they're graduating, we need to compete in this global marketplace, and it's extremely important we get these skills in for our children.
Exactly. So when I was kind of looking at different devices to kind of build like a K-12 robotics or computer science curriculum, I was looking into some of the robots and the devices that the students can use to kind of work together and build different things. I was thinking, I was reading my school library journal, and I read a statistic that in 2020 there's going to be 600,000 unfilled computer science jobs. So just by working with 10 students at an enrichment program last year on robotics and computer science and web design, I couldn't believe the interest. All the students were talking about it. They couldn't wait to come to the next class. So if we can do this with all of our students and really just, expose them to some of these devices and excite them, I really think that it's going to change their world, and they're going to be interested, and they're going to be excited about learning and technology. And, like I said, 600,000 unfilled computer science jobs, that might be a road that they decide to go down.
And by the way, for the if you want to look up more statistics on computer science and the job growth, I would go to code.org. There's quite a few alarming statistics that we really need to take action. One of them is that the deficit of females in the workplace of STEM. So, but anyways, I digress. So there's lots more statistics there. Allows for, where are we, provides, is that where I am?
Allows for experimentation.
Okay, thank you. get carried away. Very passionate. Okay, so allows for experimentations and lessons and methodology. I think that one just speaks for itself. The next one is talking about access to technology. There's many different things that technology can do. So it's so hard to summarize this in one short paragraph. But for example, if you were to take Google Classrooms, for those of you who may not have heard of that, it's a collaboration tool. It allows, as Mr. Soto explained before, they have things like everybody, most of you probably use Gmail, right? So that's a Google product, I guess. You have cloud technology that you're able to share and send documents. You can collaborate it, so you can collaborate on documents so that instead of having an Excel file where you open Excel, you make a change, you send it out, that person opens the file, they make a change, they send it back. We have real live editing and collaboration tools that are going to be a huge benefit. Project management is so important these days. Everybody is always multitasking. When I work, I have like 10 browsers, tabs open on my browser at a time. These tools help us with organizing and focusing on our tasks. So there's many different things that can do.
Right, so we talked about creativity and collaboration, organization, definitely. I know from experience having the students in library and computer class, they can definitely, the more practice they have in the classroom with saving their documents, organizing, whether it's cloud-based or using the local device, they definitely need the exposure and the experience in organizing their work digitally and not just in their binders and their folders and their desks. The more experience they have, the more prepared they'll be when they go off to college.
And also, a note on a lot of these technologies are extremely intuitive. So, for example, I mentioned Excel. Excel has a Google Doc replica. Like, it's almost exactly the same. It's all of the icons are there. You know, the text tool is a text tool in every program that's out there. It's very easy for students to pick up, and it's very easy for teachers to pick up as well. Okay, so next one, we have student engagement. So let's talk a little bit, how do we get these students excited and involved and interested in our material that we're teaching? Well, technology can help with that. So this first one is talking, I guess the next couple of bullets are talking about how students, instead of the model of me standing up here and just giving information, if I was a teacher in a classroom, that student now can say, you know what, instead of you just giving me the information, I want to find the answer myself. So by using this technology, they can look it up, they can try it out, they can get that hands-on experience, and they become kind of in charge of their own learning.
Right.
They're not learning in a vacuum, they're not by themselves, they have a teacher that's there that can help, that can facilitate, that can guide, but it allows that student to sort of become more intrinsically motivated.
Exactly. So I'm just thinking, I know a lot of times when students are looking for help, I always say ask someone on your team.
Right.
You know, it will encourage them to work together to figure things out on their own. So that was definitely one thing that we were talking about. And also, just from experience, I had students when I was in the high school, they were able to work together on a Google slide. And Dawn was saying how Google Slides looks just like PowerPoint, Google Sheets is just like Excel. They really do look very similar. So if you know how to use one, you can really use the other. But the great thing is that they can collaborate. So one project, just as an example, students would work together on a Google Slide presentation. So it kind of looks like a PowerPoint, only it's web-based. And then afterwards, students were able to share it with their class, and they spent an entire period, and the teacher even wanted to work, spend more days on it. But they got to visit each other's PowerPoint or Google Slides that day, as many as they could, and they could comment on each other's slides. And it was just a great experience. You know, the students were so excited to be able to share their presentations with their whole class and see the comments coming in. So it's really just a great way to get the students motivated and really switching over to an inquiry-based model where the students are looking up the information themselves, and the information will really stick there.
Yeah. So we talked about that, I guess you just went over to kind of that third one there. Okay, digital natives. So I don't know if you've ever seen that YouTube video of the two-year-old playing with the iPad, sometimes is, more proficient in technology than even some baby boomers. These children are growing up. They're born into technology. They're using it all the time. This is where the future is going. If we don't get technology in their hands, they are going to be at a disadvantage in many different ways. They're going to be at a disadvantage when they get to college. They're going to be at a disadvantage when they're applying for jobs and they don't see jobs that are available because they're lacking those skills. So the nice thing is, because they're digital natives, this is coming so easy to them.
So some people might be wondering, well, how can you use Chromebooks with kindergartners? You absolutely can. There are so many different apps that you can download on a Chromebook or even a laptop or iPads, of course, So even looking at kindergarten, first grade level, there are so many programs for the students to be fully engaged, and they just get so excited and intrinsically motivated when they get to use any of this technology.
Okay. Thank you. And kind of wrap up sort of our long-term strategy and how we're going to support this, I'm going to turn it over to you, Mr. Soto, but thank you for your attention.
Thank you.
Okay, as I mentioned in the beginning, you have to present a sort of maintenance plan as well as a professional development plan as part of your improvement plan. So these are some of the things that we talked about before. Most of the items, if you can see, in terms of the warranty, there really isn't a lot of maintenance that we have to do. If you're looking at the first piece, seven of the items are either covered by a five-year warranty or a three-year warranty. Actually, only two are covered by a three-year warranty. That would be the Chromebooks as well as the security measures. Everything else is covered by a five-year warranty. So for the first 5 years, we don't really have to do a lot of maintenance. There are two items that you can actually support even after the warranty. After the warranty, we can actually have a service contract for the security items, where we would pay a nominal fee to the company that actually will install the items for us, and they will come back to maintain it in the event that we have some type of technical glitch. The professional development piece is possibly one of the most important pieces of this entire proposal, because we don't necessarily want to make this investment and not have it utilized effectively. So when you're developing a professional development plan that incorporates technology, you have to consider how are teachers and how is the system going to integrate that technology into the curriculum and into the instructional process. So initially what we would do, we would have a training model for teachers where we would actually use like a pilot program where we would have a couple of teachers that feel a little more comfortable with the technology, utilize Chromebooks in their classroom, develop lessons, develop units, develop assessments, develop some of the collaborative learning that Don and Michelle spoke about to sort of spearhead the process at each level, at the elementary and middle and high school. Now, we realize that it's going to look different at each level. So how the technology is going to be utilized at the elementary may not be the same as the high school. High school students may be a little more self-reliant, they may be a little more independent, and teachers have to understand how to facilitate that process. Every year we have something that is called Smart Schools. It's part of our BOCES contract that we contract with BOCES every year. This current year we have 8 days allocated to the district for someone who's a technology expert to come in and provide professional development to our staff. This year, two topics that we're going to be looking at, I've already planned it for this year, is the benefits of becoming a Google school, and the second one is the benefits of utilizing a one-to-one device to improve the instructional process. So we would actually look at that, introducing that this year, so that if we get this approved and we can fund some of the expenditure items that we're proposing, we can actually have the staff at least comfortable in understanding of some of the technology initiatives that we're trying to push forward.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Just on the quotes that you've provided, I would assume that the three quote obligation under our terms and state law still applies. So these are just kind of indicative quotes based on what you looked around.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay, that's helpful.
Yes, when we go back, we might actually, once again, we can actually revise this up to 25%. Right. And even if we have to revise it further, we can do so with the superintendent's approval and with something that will be posted on the website for 2 weeks. So we have that flexibility.
So is this effectively what you would post on the website for 2 weeks before it's ultimately approved?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. I don't know if anybody, I don't know from a board perspective if there's any input on the specific line items, and I have some thoughts on in general, but Annette, do you have any input on specific line items?
And what they want to do? No, I like the line items.
No,
I'm
problem.
Very impressed.
I thought this presentation was great. It was really, really good. I just want to take a minute to thank you, Ricardo, Dawn, Michelle, Marcus, Phil, John, the time that you put into this. And, I read every email and I read each deck as they came across. It was unbelievable. Frankly, I'm excited to have the opportunity to upgrade the infrastructure here, but more excited by what you said, which is, you know, if our kids don't have the ability to come in and touch these things and work on them and feel them, they're going to get to college where other kids have had that opportunity and they're going to be 5 steps behind. And Dawn, you know, what you said about kind of the virtual field trips, I think is phenomenal. So to the extent that, you know, we can use those things and really do it and learn. I know my kid comes home and says, you know, we learned about this, we learned about that, we saw this, and we went to Africa in, you know, in class this week. And it's unbelievable. And this just expands that. So from my perspective, I think this is great. I do want to further explore the lease option. I don't know if there's a double dip prohibition with a BOCES 8. I think there probably would be, but
pretty nice. Pretty nice.
When does it have to be voted on, Nova Cono? Is that
once again, we can vote it back. We could come back at the next board meeting, and you guys can.
Is that okay for your timing of everything, though? If I place it on the next agenda, you want it tonight?
It's up to if you guys feel comfortable. I would love to present it to the community.
So, from a dollars perspective, I can't remember. Did we from a budget perspective? So you need to spend $1 million from our budget. Right, and then it gets reimbursed when this starts.
You have to provide the cash.
The cash for reimbursement. Does that have to be approved by the community, or did we do it last? Did we do it in May?
No, it doesn't have to be.
It doesn't have to be? Okay. And does this address, Robin? I looked at you and something popped into my head. Oh, on the security side, so you've been doing a lot of work with the Emergency Preparedness Committee. Do the cameras...
Those were all part of things that we were hoping for, and the ID scanning.
Yes. I guess my question is there any more? Is the Technology Committee and Emergency Preparedness Committee working together to make sure that the things that...
Yes.
So then I'm going to keep moving. I'm going to stop asking questions. If you guys are doing it, it's great.
Does anyone else have any questions that they have? No? Okay, thank you. Everybody.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
What would you rather do? Approve now?
I would love.
We're approving it so that it gets posted to the community.
Yeah, posted to the community for comments.
Yeah.
Put that in there.
We'll put that on the agenda.
Okay.
So motion. We're in the green. Motion to approve the Technology Committee's recommendations and the line items set forth in the presentation tonight. For purposes of posting for the 30-day requirement?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes, motion carries unanimously.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. We have a second presentation. And Avery, I was holding until like, I know you're going to be 8:05, so it worked out actually very well. But is Ms. Heshen here? She is. I'm sorry. I didn't see. So, Ms. Heshen, the floor is yours. Thank you.
Okay, so as many of you may know, because it was on the district website, Avery Hoda is chosen as a nominee through the New York State Education Department for the Presidential Scholars Program. So not that we've ever really known about this before. Actually, Russ had received an email and then passed along to Ed Caswell. And then Ed came to the counselors and said, do we have a student that we can nominate who displays, you know, extraordinary academic success, but above and beyond that. So knowing Avery as well as I do, I could go on and on about what Avery has accomplished besides just an amazing transcript and a really hard worker. He doesn't stop. He's an important member of the robotics club. He works many hours. He's working towards his Eagle Scout. You haven't accomplished that yet, right? Oh, he did. He accomplished his Eagle Scout. So what happened was we sent his transcript and a letter of recommendation. And so he was chosen, and there were 25 students from New York State chosen. So this is really an amazing award. We were really excited. And so Fred Thiel basically chose him, but there was a committee, so it went from a local office to a New York State office, and they actually called and said how excited they were that they had chosen Avery. So it just, you know, the history of this is that the U.S. Presidential Scholars Program was established in 1964 by executive order of the president to recognize and honor some of our nation's most distinguished graduating high school seniors. Students are chosen as these presidential scholars. What they're going to receive is an expense-paid trip to Washington, D.C. in June, and the U.S. Presidential Scholars Medallion at a ceremony sponsored by the White House. So During their visit to Washington, scholars can meet important national and international figures, including government officials, educators, authors, musicians, and scientists. And then Avery supposedly can then enter into a scholarship. I guess there's one student chosen from New York State in the end. So Avery, this in June, will go to D.C., and so we're really proud of him. So.
Can I answer that? And it's hard to imagine the countless emails and letters we get bombarded with soliciting our business or throwing out possible scholarships and things of that nature. So for this to be at this level, you have to understand that every superintendent got these letters, not just from Fred Thiel's office, but from also Senator LaValle's office as well. And because we're in a presidential election, this is a big deal. I mean, Russ got his marching orders from his association. I gave my marching orders to my association, you know, through the principals. So they got a lot of nominations from every single school. This isn't just like five kids applied and Avery got, you know, he's the fifth kid. I mean, he's the top of the top.
Yeah.
And not just recognized in New York State, he is one of the top seniors in our school. He's always in Mrs. Hesch's office and, you know, working with her. He's always with me. He's one of the voices of Senator Rich's morning announcements. He's in my leadership team. He's a Compassion Without Borders ambassador. So he's the real deal. And he represents our school district, and we're all very, very proud of Avery Hoda.
Yeah.
All right, so congratulations.
That brings us to the next section of the agenda tonight, which is questions and comments regarding tonight's agenda only. Does anybody have any questions and comments regarding tonight's agenda? Okay, so motion to adopt the regular minutes, the minutes of the regular meeting of November 4th, 2015.
Motion.
Motion second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
So let's do 6, 3, and 16.
We're going to do a motion to adopt items 6 through 16, except for item 8, which we will do separately. Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
What?
It was a correction.
Okay. Which one?
Contract. Number 9, it says Cameron, it should read Kimberly.
Okay, with the change. All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
The district recently advertised for candidates to fill various teacher and support staff vacancies for 2015-2016. Candidates were interviewed by committees, building principals, and other superintendents. Recommended action that upon recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the following appointments.
Do you
want me to read
the names? Yeah, yeah.
Linda M. Greening, probationary elementary school assistant principal, Michelle Kennedy.
Can you read all the things? I won't get them. Huh? Can you read the things?
Come on. Michelle Kennedy, district news coordinator, Thomas Lindley, volunteer winter boys traffic assistant coach, Santos Segudo, volunteer middle school boys basketball assistant coach, Daniel O'Sullivan, leave replacement special education teacher, and Nicholas Thomas, varsity boys basketball coach.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously. Ms. Harbert, do you want to come up for a moment?
I would love to. So should I just say a few words, our process, and then
you don't have PowerPoints prepared for the whole thing.
It's all right here. But, you know, as you know, Jackie S. had been in the district for 11 years and was here to welcome you, and I came new to Senator Rich's. And so we really felt like, you know, there were big shoes and lots of connections. And so we knew that we really wanted to put together a great committee to find, like, just an absolute amazing instructional leader, but someone who will love our kids and someone who really had a great deal of elementary experience. And we all looked through a lot of resumes, and there were many candidates who are out there with great credentials, but I feel that we really found someone with amazing credentials. And we did a little walkthrough in the school, and it was just really so great watching her react to our amazing youngsters at Clayton Huey, and I just am very excited about our new partnership and all that she's going to bring to our community. So, Linda Breeding, just lots of love and joy that we welcome you into the Clayton Huey family.
I think the board is completely behind you, and we wish you all the luck, and I know you're not going to need it, so good luck.
It brings us to the next section of the agenda, which is questions and comments from the community on items not on the agenda tonight. Okay. The next Board of Education meeting will be on December 16th, 2015 at 7:30 in the district office. Motion to adjourn to executive session for purposes of discussions regarding proposed pending or current litigation, collective negotiations under the Taylor Law, CMPA, other matters, the disclosure of which would result in an unwarranted invasion of personal privacy. Motion. Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. Have a great night.
Have a good night.
Thank you.